Hello, 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 and welcome to the College of Creation. My name is Dan.
And my name is Michael.
And we are Dungeons & Dragons DMs who love to homebrew items, spells, creatures, and features for D&D. This is a show where we take prompts from our community and make new homebrew every single week based on those prompts. We have no idea what we're going to make before we roll the prompt, see what it is. And it's always a surprise and always a delight.
It truly is.
A more specific prompt than last week, it was yes. Ammunition with variable damage based on the user's class or subclass. So a lot more specific. Ideally, make ammunition and the function, the like homebrewed like sort of like feature of it was based around the class or subclass.
Yep.
How did you deal with the sort of stricter nature of today's prompt?
I left mine up to chance this week. When we did our cyborg subclasses about a month and a half ago now, we were tasked with making a subclass, but it didn't designate class. And we rolled on a table to see which class we would make something for. And I did something similar this week. I rolled and came up with a specific class that I made all of my items for this week. So I focused in on one class and delineated down based on subclass. So that focused everything a lot for me. That made it a little bit easier as I went throughout the week.
Nice. I'm very excited about that, hearing that now that you went the like hone in on a specific class and then go the subclass route, because I ended up doing the opposite. I didn't focus on subclass at all. I focused on classes.
I love
it. So the base classes and the base class features. That was my approach. So we're going to have so many incredible and way different options this time around.
Totally different.
I will say the sort of like defined nature of how the thing was supposed to work, I think did trip me up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a harder time than I was thinking I was going to walking into this, you know? I think I had a really hard time not just repeating myself, which is what I ended up wanting to do a lot of.
It was one of those weeks where, or one of those prompts where it was easy to kind of get into too much of a groove and make things really similar. And I ended up definitely doing that more times than I wanted and had to go back and rehash several things. And I think my final product ended up being diverse enough with enough kind of ties to the other things that I made to make it seem feasible, but it definitely was tricky getting the details just right so it didn't seem like I was just repeating myself over and over again.
Yeah, for sure. I think we'll get into it when I present mine, but it really was just a first thought, best thought sort of week for me, and really more than a lot, I think, of other weeks. This is a week where I think most of what I came in with is, it's there, it's fully constructed, but I do think it needs way more work and polishing to feel maybe cohesive than some other weeks. This is really, you know, spaghetti at the wall territory we're in for me, where I'm kind of just throwing a bunch of stuff out there this week. You know, it almost feels like the Druid Spells week, where I wish I would have gotten some more cohesion in the whole thing. But for the most part, I like what I made, but definitely there are some that are like, this is something I can add to my game right away, and a bunch of others that I'm like, this is draft one, clearly.
And that's okay, you know? What this thing is about. Week by week, making it work to the best of our abilities in that prompt. I think this is a really interesting prompt. Certainly nothing that I would ever think to make on my own, which I really liked. I don't know if I've ever thought about ammunition a single time.
That's another thing. I don't ever homebrew like ammunition.
Very
I'm usually
rarely.
Homebrewing a weapon for which you can use regular ammunition or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a slightly trickier process. And to be fair, I didn't make all ammunition. I made kind of a wide variety of things. Yeah, this was definitely a more challenging one for me than certain others have been.
Agreed. We've both done this a couple times now where we're just outside of the prompt. I think that in a way, I ended up with a form of ammunition. It is ammunition in nature. Ooh. It is, but it isn't. It's kind of its own type of... We'll get into it. You'll see.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. I'm excited about that, for sure.
I went first last week. Dan, would you like to present first today?
I would love to. You're going to go into our little shared drive here, and you're going to open up your document. It's called Multi-Class Munitions.
I love it already.
Okay, so my process was... I decided that I didn't just want to pick a class and then go through ammunition for every subclass. And I also didn't want to develop something just for each class without any sort of structure that I was going in.
Sure.
So I decided that what would be interesting is to make specific ammunition to be used with specific multi-classes. And then I pared that way down and said, like, I don't want to make, like, a million things. They're like, here's ammunition that you can use if you're a sorcerer multi-class with a rogue. I decided to simplify it to just be like, I'm going to make one thing for each class multi-classed into something else. Ideally, something, like, antithetical to a degree. This is a full run of 14 either items, feats, or, just items and feats. Let me just read you my sort of preamble here, and then we'll get into it.
Let's do it.
So, multi-class munitions. Oftentimes, just one class is not enough. In order to achieve certain aims or follow certain thrusts of fate, one must make the difficult decisions to diversify one's skill set. This strategy opens up new possibilities in each sphere, but the most interesting and useful new opportunities often emerge from situations in which two class abilities synergize and create something greater than the sum of their parts. In an effort to encourage and reward creative multiclassing, the following weapons, feats, and ammunitions are designed to harmonize two archetypes into a single useful idea.
I love this.
Let's just run them all down. The first thing I created was for an artificer, so this is called the bulldozer. It is a weapon. It requires attunement by an artificer with martial weapon proficiency. You can think of this as like a mini artillery unit, basically.
Sure.
It has a range of 80 to 320 feet, deals 3d6 bludgeoning damage. It's heavy. It requires loading. It's two-handed, so it's a beefy thing. This large-barreled mini artillery unit deals double damage to objects, structures, and constructs, and requires special ammunition. In a single day, as long as you have your artificer's tools and a sufficient workspace, you can craft a number of rounds equal to your proficiency bonus by spending 1 hour and 10 gold per round crafted. I just threw in some quick crafting rules just specific to this particular item that doesn't use standard ammunition that exists in the game.
Great.
Just to give you, you know, some limited use of it, but the ability to make this your primary thing if you want to. But it's kind of a siege weapon in many ways, but specifically has that anti-construct thing. And it feels right for an artificer who has multi-classed into something like fighter, or even rogue, or ranger.
Yeah, this is really cool.
The second one here are arcane javelins. So javelins are a typical barbarian weapon. So these require attunement by a barbarian with the spellcasting or pact magic feature.
There we go.
These unique martial weapons can be crafted to hold primal magic. An arcane javelin has three charges when it is acquired. The javelin is infused with a single spell shown in the table below, and that changes by rarity. You can use a bonus action on your turn to expend a charge and cast the listed spell without requiring concentration and apply its effects to the next successful attack you make with this javelin before the spell's duration ends. And these are all just the smite spells. So Searing Smite, Thunder Smite, and Wrathful Smite are uncommon. Branding Smite and Blinding Smite are rare. And Staggering Smite and Banishing Smite are very rare. Just gives your barbarian the option to cast a spell without having to maintain concentration, so you can rage afterwards, but then next time you use this, you get those effects of the smite on a javelin.
Yeah, this is great. It adds a little bit of versatility to barbarians, for sure. It's cool that you get a free use of a smite.
Yeah.
Nice. Love it.
The next one is for bards. These are called dissonance rounds. These are arrows. Each arrow emits a subsonic pulse when it strikes a target, giving it disadvantage on saving throws against your bard spells for 1 minute or until it uses its action to remove the arrow. So it deals some damage and just kind of like upsets the ability of that creature to resist your bard spells.
This is great.
Then we have the Beads of the War Priest. A single chain of these wondrous holy tokens is found with 1d6 plus 1 beads. When you cast Spiritual Weapon, you can expend one of the beads and destroy it to grant the Spiritual Weapon one additional feature from the list below for the duration of the spell. Your Spiritual Weapon's attacks gain a range of 30 feet. Your Spiritual Weapon gains the Interception Fighting Style, which you can use your reaction to trigger.
Nice.
Or your Spiritual Weapon scores a critical hit on a roll of 19 or 20 on the d20. I considered putting some attunement requirements that, like, you have to have martial weapon. The thing is tricky with clerics, because clerics do have martial weapon proficiency, so it's like, what do you use as the limiting feature? I decided to figure that out later. But I like these as just, like, a way to buff up your spiritual weapon a little bit.
Yeah. It's such a cool spell, and adding these on, I think, makes it even better without going super overpowered. The ability to choose one of these is great. I mean, that's limiting in itself.
Yeah, and I really like the idea of
very cool
the way that, like, the spiritual weapon works in, like, Baldur's Gate 3. It almost functions like a separate creature, which is sort of strange in some ways, and I don't want to replicate that exactly. But I do think doing this sort of thing makes it feel like it's a unique feature and something that, you know, you
sure.
have a little bit more agency over how it operates on the battlefield.
Yeah.
Then we have Trapper Arrows. These are for druids. So these are arrows for a bow. These arrows have a magical glass bulb instead of a sharp point and are designed to be used by druids with longbow or short bow proficiency. When this arrow hits a creature that is within your current wild shape CR range, that creature must make a DC 13 wisdom saving throw, or its essence becomes trapped within the arrowhead, and you can retrieve the arrow. When you use your wild shape feature, you can call on the trapped essence and transform into that creature instead, even if it does not fulfill other wild shape requirements. When you do so, the arrow is destroyed.
This is perfect.
This is maybe my favorite thing that's on this list.
You're only halfway through. This will be my favorite item. I think this is genius. I have a druid at my home table that would love this. We always encounter things that wouldn't necessarily fall under wild shape. This is a great and perfectly limited way to give just a tiny bit of access into something else.
Yeah.
Really well done.
Super fun. I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
The next one are Elemental Bolts. If you're following along with your math, these are for the fighter with your alphabet. These are crossbow bolts. So these bolts can be infused with magical power. When you cast a spell on your turn, you can infuse a single bolt with the residual magic as a free action. The first target you hit with the bolt in the next 10 minutes takes an additional 1d8 acid, cold, fire, lightning, poison, or thunder damage. I don't know about this. Fighter was really tough for this one, because fighter is such a blank slate that, like, anything you multi-class into, you already have access to any weapons you might be interested in, and the spell casting for some of these other features just kind of goes the opposite direction. So I almost feel like I shouldn't have made anything for a fighter, if I'm being honest, but I didn't want to leave them out. So this is what I got.
I mean, this is serviceable, you know? This is something that a fighter would use, just another tool in their arsenal. I agree with you. This, you know, this is kind of a take it or leave it item to fill the hole, and it reads like that.
Yeah.
But I think for what it is well crafted. Like, the mechanic is good. This would be a really cool specialist shop item that you go in and you just get some elemental ammunition. It's a cool thing to just have on your person in case you need it.
Yeah, it's not bad. I do think, you know, if you walk into a bowyer's shop and you're looking through all of the, like, vaguely magical or near magical ammunition options, this is not going to be the one that catches your attention. Make them cheap, cheaper than the rest of the options, so that you can have that opportunity, but whatever. We'll just move on to the Scourge Darts. These are darts, a common key weapon or a common monk weapon. Perfect. So these magical key-infused darts have a single charge that is restored each day at dawn. When you attack with a dart, you can expend its charge to change the damage type and force the target to make a saving throw against your key save DC or be affected by the conditions determined on the table below. The target can repeat its saving throw at the end of each of its turns, ending the effect on a success, and these darts can be retrieved and their charges restored if you expend a spell slot to infuse it again as a free action. Or as an, not as a free action, as an action. So the basic breakdown here is you can change the damage to necrotic and frighten the target, change it to radiant and blind the target, change it to cold and petrify the target, change it to lightning and paralyze slash deafen the target, change it to psychic and knock the target unconscious and prone, or deal force damage and apply a level of exhaustion at the beginning of each of the target's turns thereafter.
Yeah.
Just some additional darts that a monk can use, and if the monk has branched out into a spellcasting class, you can get more uses out of that.
Yeah, this is great.
We next have a feat. This is a feat for paladins. It's called Smite Slinger. The prerequisite is you must be a paladin with the ability to cast at least one cantrip with an attack roll. So, you can infuse your cantrip with divine power. When you hit a target with a cantrip that has an attack roll, you can apply your divine smite damage as though you had hit that creature with a melee weapon attack. Notably, you can't get cantrips with an attack roll from the Holy Warrior fighting style, because clerics don't have one of those. Clerics cantrips that do damage are all save based, which I didn't know until I checked on this.
This is really cool.
This would be probably too much for even just a single dip into Warlock just to get the Eldritch Blast, but hey, whatever. Anyway, the next one we have are for Rangers. They are Beacon Arrows. These arrows implant the target with an arcane magnet that makes the target more susceptible to magical attacks. When you hit a target with a beacon arrow, the target has disadvantage on saving throws against spells and other magical effects for 1 minute.
This is great.
I want to make it more specific to Rangers, and I can't figure out how to make it more specific to Rangers. So maybe you can help me as someone who plays Rangers or is more aligned with the class.
I think it could, if it was an item specifically for Rangers, you could tie it to their fighting styles and have
maybe
like two or three different options, because that's something that's at low level for Rangers that is kind of integral to the building of their class after that. And this would be a really great option for the archery fighting style.
I'm also considering, I like it too, but I feel like it doesn't need to be necessarily part of this collection as much as an idea that I had separately way later, too late to change it, but just like make some ranger ammunition that isn't about dealing damage at all, but is simply about like exploration and like setting a beacon or like a waypoint for yourself.
Yeah, some tracking arrows.
Yeah,
some
something
flares.
Where you're like, these are this, yeah. You know, breadcrumbs, some sort of sense of like,
yeah.
I always know where this thing is in space.
Like a ranger glyph of warding almost.
Where you yeah.
Arcanely mark your territory.
Yeah, something like that.
Very cool.
Worth considering changing the option there, but we'll move on to cantrip paint. Cantrip paint is a wondrous item designed to be used by rogues. This arcane infused jar of paint contains 2d6 uses when acquired. As an action, you can expend a use of the paint to apply a coating to any piece of ammunition or a ranged weapon. The next time you deal sneak attack damage with that ammunition or weapon, you can forego dealing the additional damage to apply the effect of one of your known cantrips instead. The cantrip takes effect at the point of impact and lasts for its full duration if it would normally require concentration.
This is cool.
This is somewhat similar to a spell that I homebrewed with an Artificer Rogue multiclass who wanted to be able to apply sneak attack to spells, but it was really hard to figure out limiting it to level spells or cantrips, and like it just wouldn't, it didn't want to stack nicely if it was also cantrips, so we it took us a while to figure it out, but I do like the idea of like that sneak attack and spell casting sort of synergy working nicely together, where like you want to be able to add that spell casting boost to sneak attack somehow, And I think this is a sort of medium fair way to do it.
Cantrips are the things that scale the best, you know. Leveled spells are more powerful, but the cantrips are always very dependable with scaling. So you're not losing a lot when you're sacrificing your sneak attack damage in place of that.
Yeah, I think that most of them, if you are wanting to deal damage, most of those cantrips are going to stack with a similar level of damage that you would deal with your sneak attack damage. Maybe deal some elemental damage if that's what you're looking for. Or the other sort of creative option is throw a utility cantrip in here. Throw, you know, something that's a little bit weird into this paint instead. And then you're foregoing damage to, you know, apply something interesting into the space. So next up we have the Astral Launcher. This is a weapon. It's a light crossbow to be attuned by a sorcerer with martial weapon proficiency. So this crossbow requires precision and magical skill to wield effectively. When you make an attack with this weapon, you can spend sorcery points to apply any of your metamagic options to the attack as though you were casting a spell.
Yeah, that's good. Simple, but really nice.
It's very simple, primarily useful to a sorcerer who also uses ranged weapons a lot or something similar. Then we get down to the Eldritch Brands. These are heavy crossbow bolts to be used by a warlock. When you hit a target with one of these cursed bolts, the target becomes branded with a draining curse. For 1 minute, any time the target is hit by or fails a saving throw against one of your warlock spells, its maximum HP is also reduced by 1d6.
Ooh. Did you ever think about adding a stipulation for when that is regained, or is it just reduced forever?
Oh, I assume, until the curse is done. I can put that in. I also assume that if this damage reduces a creature to zero, then it dies. I'll add that. I don't know about this one either. I'm kind of medium on it. It's fine. It's not my favorite.
Yeah, I think this is really close to the fighters, where it's a curse, a draining curse, feels on brand for a warlock. It's not necessarily something that you would go into a shop and say, I'm going to take this. as a warlock,
right?
I might not seek out heavy crossbow proficiency just so I can get these.
Right.
But I think if you do end up organically in a situation where you would have that proficiency, this is something that is useful.
I'll get to the last one here, but I think that was just something that I struggled with in general, because I had set myself to this task of like, this is the thing we're doing. We're making ammunition, ideally. So ideally something ranged for every class to multi-class into an atypical second class. But like for so many of them, like ammunition and creating the ranged option is not something that's necessarily going to be the optimal option. And so coming up with ways to shoehorn in a reason for you to utilize something that like it just doesn't make sense for you to utilize was maybe
tough.
I think I blocked myself in maybe a little bit too much and should have allowed myself to expand out into like, this isn't ammunition, this is a melee weapon, because I do think there are lots of interesting ways to give a warlock access to more melee versatility. But like the range, it's like, I'm a warlock. I kind of have that covered.
I already got that. Yeah.
Like your invocations, especially the Eldritch Blast invocations, are going to do better than any of the things that I can make out of ammunition. So it just doesn't make sense for me to try and optimize a ranged option for a warlock. In the same way, it doesn't really make sense for me to try and make and optimize a new healing option for clerics. It's like you are fine on that front.
Right.
You need something that will help you diversify a little bit. So that's kind of what I ran into with a lot of these, which I think is why I'm struggling to enjoy as many of them. But we'll get to the last
one.
The last one is called the Arcanist's Sight. This is a wondrous item. It requires attunement by a wizard with longbow or shortbow proficiency. So you can attach this arcane targeting device to any longbow or shortbow. When looking through this sight, you can determine if any creatures you can see are concentrating on a spell. And attack rolls made with the attached bow are made with advantage against creatures concentrating on spells, and any creature hit by an attack from the bow must make its concentration saving throw at disadvantage. Specifically just like, I can see you are casting magic and I will shoot it out of your brain.
Yeah, yep. Arcane scope. That's cool. Abjuration wizards, great.
Abjuration wizards,
war magic, great.
War magic, or honestly, again, it's just one of those things that's like, I could just take the requirements off of this one and just give it to anybody, and that would be kind of neat. That would just be a good thing for anybody to have. So, yeah, all told, I feel like I limited myself maybe a little bit too much by requiring some of these and tying them sort of in a clumsy way in certain cases to specific classes.
I think with a week to work on it, that looks really good.
Hey, thanks. And I do really like a couple of them.
Yeah.
I like a couple of them a lot. The Trapper Era's chief among them.
Oh, man. That's so good. Yeah. The Druid ones, great. I really like the Artificer one at the very beginning.
Yep. I've got some good ideas here. I would probably pare this down to just a few things if I did. But I had committed myself to making the whole run, so I did.
The commitment shows, and it was well done for the time allotted and what you committed yourself to doing.
Well, let's hope that you didn't make quite so many things.
As far as the sum total, I either made more or way less. It depends on how you look at it.
Okay.
Please, if you would open your document, I present to you today, Dan, the idea of divine fragmentation.
This is
just for the cleric class.
Okay.
Divided out by divine domain. Each domain has a different effect of this item. I made one item. I was going to make more of an array of things, but I decided to just focus on this one thing and provide different options for different domains. So what I made this week is a divine fragment. That is the ammunition in question. This is granted by a deity or other ultra-powerful being. This shard is crystalline in appearance and sharp at one end. It can be used as a projectile or an enchantment of your spell casting, which is the ammunition part of this that I'll get to in a second. You may receive one fragment at a time, or a cask of fragments that contains 1d6 minus 1 fragments to a minimum of 1. So they can come in a case, or just individually, depending on how your game master wants your relationship with your deity to be.
Very cool.
The first stipulation in the divine fragment is a divine bolt. It's very simple. You make a ranged weapon attack. You are proficient with the fragment for the purpose of this attack, and its range is 40 feet. The damage type is determined by your divine domain, as seen in the descriptions below, and the domain damage column of the divine fragmentation table. Now, the second part of this is spell augmentation. When you cast a spell that requires a ranged spell attack roll, you can attach a fragment to travel to the same target. If the spell attack hits, it deals an additional 1d12 damage. The damage type, again, is determined by your domain, and one additional effect takes place. This effect is detailed in the descriptions below and the spell augmentation effect column of the divine fragmentation table. So I have two parts of this. I have the kind of listed, long-form descriptions of all of these, and then to make it simplified, I also have a table at the end. It's all the same information. I just included that if you want to simplify and kind of condense everything at the bottom.
Nice.
So I won't go through the table. We'll just go through the different domains. Starting with Arcana domain, deals additional force damage on a hit. And the fragment splits into three small missiles that launch out from the spell's target and hit any creature of your choice within 10 feet. Each missile deals 1d8 plus 4 force damage. So it's essentially an enhanced magic missile.
Very cool.
The death domain deals extra necrotic damage. The extra effect, the fragment emits a dark pulse out to 10 feet, centered on the spell's target. Any creature within the pulse, including the original target of the spell, must make a con save, taking 1d10 plus 2 necrotic damage on a failure, or half as much on a success. For the forge domain, there's additional fire damage, and the fragment superheats the target's equipment, causing them to instantly drop anything that they are holding. If any creature touches the equipment, they immediately take 1d8 fire damage, and the equipment returns to a normal temperature after your next turn.
That's so very cool.
Just disarming.
Love it.
Moving on to the Grave Domain, deals necrotic damage, and the fragment crumbles to dust, and the spell's target must succeed on a dex save against your spell save DC or sink into the ground until the end of your next turn. While in the ground, the creature is restrained. So it's just taking them off of the battlefield until the end of your next turn.
Oh, so they go all the way underground.
I didn't stipulate, but I think maybe halfway, enough where restrained makes sense.
Yeah, sure. Still can be targeted by things, though. Don't have full cover.
Yeah, still can be targeted. Don't have full cover. They're not suffocating or anything. Yeah,
gotcha.
Just enough for the restrained condition to make sense.
Cool.
Next, we have the Knowledge Domain. This deals additional psychic damage. You can immediately cast the Detect Thoughts spell on the spell's target or one creature of your choice within 10 feet of them. So within the same action,
great,
you get a free Detect Thoughts on somebody within that 20-foot diameter.
That's very useful.
Moving on to the Life Domain, deals extra radiant damage, and you can choose up to three creatures within 10 feet of the spell's target point. Each chosen creature regains 1d8 hit points. Alternatively, you can regain 1d12 hit points. So if you're just firing a spell into a sea of enemies, you can take that health for yourself.
Yep.
Or if you're playing the long game and a couple of your buddies are fighting somebody, you can hit them with a spell and also give them some spot healing on the fly.
That's great.
Light Domain, also radiant damage for the additional damage. The target of the spell sheds bright light out to 10 feet until the end of your next turn. Attacks are made at advantage against any creature within the radius of the light.
Cool.
Very simple.
Yep, perfect.
Nature Domain deals extra poison damage. The fragment buries itself into the ground and releases a thick vine towards every creature within 10 feet of the spell's target. All affected creatures must succeed on a dex save or become grappled until the end of your next turn. A creature grappled in this way cannot move away from the spell's target. So this is like grasping vine.
Yeah.
But for a bunch of creatures. Ideally, this would work really well with like a cleric wizard multiclass or a cleric ranger, a hunter ranger that can attack a bunch of targets multiple times.
Just keep them
nice.
You
can lock a bunch
together.
Keep them nice and packed together and then deal some more AoE damage because they can't get away. That's the idea here.
Very useful.
Moving on to Order Domain, the extra damage dealt is force damage. And the fragment flashes with brilliant and strange patterns out to 10 feet from the spell's target. All creatures within that range must make a charisma save. On the failure, a creature can only take an action, a bonus action, or movement on its next turn.
Great.
Peace Domain, the extra damage is magical piercing.
Okay.
The fragment dissolves into a soothing blue mist and is ejected out from the spell's target 10 feet in all directions. The target and every other creature within the affected area must succeed on a wisdom save or become paralyzed until the end of your next turn.
Very nice.
It just shuts them down. Yep. Keeping the peace. Tempest Domain does thunder damage. The fragment emits a shockwave out to 10 feet, centered on the spell's target point. Any creature within the wave, including the original target of the spell, is deafened until the end of your next turn and must succeed on a strength save or be knocked prone. So deafened and possibly prone.
Cool.
Deafened for sure, possibly prone. Trickery Domain, the fragment sticks to the spell's target and turns invisible. It ignites in 1d4 rounds, dealing 1d8 psychic damage for every round it waits to ignite. The sticky grenade from Halo.
Yeah, that's very good. That's very good.
Moving on to Twilight Domain, only two left here. It does an additional cold damage. The fragment erupts into a swell of shadow, creating a 10-foot radius dome of magical darkness centered on the spell's target until the end of your next turn. Nice and simple.
Just nice free darkness.
Yeah. We could all use a little bit more magical darkness in our games.
Great.
War Domain deals additional magical bludgeoning damage, and the fragment dissolves into a thick, blood-like liquid, inciting a hunger for violence in those closest to it. This should be the same radius as everything else. All creatures within 10 feet must make a wisdom saving throw. On a failure, a creature must use any available attacks against the creature closest to it on its next turn. If there are no creatures within its range, it must use its full movement speed to move towards the closest creature and attack it once it reaches them.
Bloodlust, great.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So that's what you use right at the top of the combat to to get some free damage dealt within the enemy ranks.
Yeah.
And that's it.
These are very, very cool, nice little like boons that a cleric can grab, use. I assume they're all one use, you know, whether
they
you
are
use it as
use.
A projectile or as a spell augmentation. You just like, boom, use it, done. It's
yep. And then I think it's left open enough that a DM can decide how much these would be used, how easy they would be to find or, yeah. or procure. I think that there's something that could easily be misconstrued as just gemstones possibly and sold on accident at a
cool.
shop. I think there are a lot of different ways that you could use this. I didn't put it in the actual description. I think when I go in and do edits for whatever future compendium this will be a part of, I've lost track at this point. But I will include some sort of description at the beginning. Make some sort of assertion that you as a cleric, if you're within a radius of this, you would know what it is. You wouldn't be required to make a check to identify it. I think that is fair to say.
No, that's very cool.
But other than that, I think that the more open this can be, the better, because they can be used in a lot of different ways, just depending on the domain that you choose.
Yeah, I mean, the first sort of question that I have is like, are these like just whenever they exist outside of like your party's inventory or whatever in the world, are they attuned to a specific domain first, or is that a thing that like they are like blank slates until a cleric basically like takes one, or are they then, you know, attuned to specific domains, and then when a cleric finds one that isn't of their domain, can they still do anything with it?
That is a good question. I think that is where the kind of open nature of it really it comes into play for specific GMs. I think that either way could work.
I think
could be completely neutral until a deity is like, these are for you, my knowledge domain cleric. And you are the only one that can use these. These are your ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think it'd be really cool to just have a ton of these gems out in the world.
Yeah.
And like, you as a cleric, an additional sub-task that you could have is to just spend some of your time, maybe downtime or maybe a part of your long rest, just like searching for them, mining for them, like seeking them at a shop or whatever. And you put in all this work and you get one from a domain that's not for you. Are you aware of like stab in Pokemon games?
No.
Okay, so stab essentially means that if you're a water type Pokemon using a water type move, you have advantage
on that
move,
okay.
Right?
Yeah,
you're just more powerful using moves that are under your type umbrella.
Gotcha.
I think something like that would be very interesting here, where a cleric could use any of these, but one that's made for their domain is a little bit more powerful, or they just have an additional D12 damage or something, some tiny boost that makes it a little bit more special for them specifically, but they could, in theory, use one from other domains.
Maybe what you'd need to do is you can still use it as a projectile, but it only does 1d12 damage. And you can still use it to augment a spell, but it doesn't deal any additional damage.
Yeah, you just get the effect.
One thing I will say, I know the Grave Domain is already really stacked and beefy and great, but I do think you could stand to beef up that spell augmentation effect a little bit.
Probably.
I think that could easily be a range of creatures that get pulled into the ground, rather than just the single target. And I think that would balance it a little bit more, maybe.
Yeah, I agree. I think maybe in the back of my head, I was cognizant of how powerful Grave Domain is, especially at lower levels.
Yeah, it is really good. I don't think you need to do anything super beefy there, but I do think it looks a little bit not quite on par with some of the other ones. I'm specifically thinking of like the Peace Domain doing a ranged
paralysis. Yeah.
Pretty massive in comparison.
Yeah.
But all that being said, I don't think any of them are also like way overpowered either. Like, I don't think any of mm-hmm. them are like, well, this one is like, why would you ever pick a different one? Like, you know,
right.
I think they're balanced well with also the ability level of the subclass and with just the like vibes and tone of the class and what the sort of play style is. Like, Arcana Domain is going to do a little bit of that like magic missile bonus damage because Arcana Domain is focused more on like expanding into other schools of magic as well, and other disciplines as well. So boosting up the damage feels in line with the way that playstyle is. Whereas yeah. like, yeah, if the Peace Domain did a bunch of extra damage, I think I would be like, well, that doesn't make sense. But because it right. just kind of like holds right. people down for a minute, that feels pretty good.
And I really tried to find some congruence across all 15 of these. Like, anything that has a range, it's all 10 feet.
As a structure, I love this. I think this is very fun. It's the kind of thing that I would Thank absolutely you. Make. This feels
yeah
that wonderful make one thing and then make a bunch of variations on that thing.
A thousand
to create
things.
Options
yep.
and to create versatility. And this feels...
Yeah,
really cool in that way to me, and a great way to give your cleric some like special boon for like, you know, doing something that's in line with their god's ideals or something like yeah. that. You know, I think DMs, we always want to reward those players who play as clerics for like wanting to speak to their deity or like uphold their deity's ideals, but like sometimes it's not always clear how to reward them. But these are great little like single use ways to be like, this is your god smiling and showing favor on you.
I like them. There are some weeks where I just don't feel the things that I make, or I'm not 100% sold. I think this would be a really good addition to the class. I think it
yeah.
promotes exploration. I think it promotes conversation between a player character and their deity or whatever their divine motivation is. Mm-hmm. And I would love to add this into a game eventually just to see how it works.
Yeah, and I think cleric was the perfect starting point for this. Like, I can see it branching
yes.
out into other
yeah.
classes, but cleric is the absolute perfect one to run this sort of like initial concept through, because of the way that, you know, cleric subclasses in a way that other subclasses aren't always like reflect both like game mechanics, but also in world existence. If you're a knowledge domain cleric, it's likely that you are a cleric of a knowledge based god or an intelligence based god or deity or pantheon.
Yep.
Whereas like wizard is another good one for that, but like for ranger, you know, is there a social in-world difference
yeah.
between a hunter and a gloomstalker? There, those lines are a little bit fuzzier. Those lines are a fair bit fuzzier in a way that like, yeah, cleric is great for this because there are those good narrative separations of the subclasses as well.
I can't tell you how excited I was when I rolled and cleric came up. I almost had the idea immediately after I saw the result. I was like, oh, it has to be some type of divine ammunition, right?
That's
like, that's
really,
the
really
only
fun.
Option.
That's really, really fun.
It just kind of fell right into place. Sometimes things just happen. How they're meant to happen, yeah.
Yeah, I think this is great. I think that you blew me out of the water this week
oh.
in terms of what you brought to the table. It's not a competition, I know, but I think you smoked me this time.
Hey, man. When the tide rises, it lifts all boats.
I'll give you that 100%. Well, let's see. Shall we find out what we're going to try and make next week?
I think so.
Amazing.
Are
you
rolling this week
or
am I rolling? I believe you rolled.
It was me. I have our big homebrew prompt table pulled up here. We got a bunch of stuff on here, a whole 20 items, plus a good amount of overflow still. But we're always looking for more.
Yeah.
So if you have a homebrew prompt for us that you'd like to see us tackle here on the show, feel free to email that to us at collegeofcreationpod@gmail.com, or you can go ahead and reach out to us on our Patreon. That's patreon.com/collegeofcreationpod. And also, while you're over there, you can join at the free level and you can find all of our homebrew creations. We post them all up every single week. At this point, we're so many episodes deep into this that there is a hefty backlog of free creations that you can access right now and start playing with at your tables. What you waiting for? Go and do it.
The best pitch I've heard in quite some time.
I don't
the
know
energy,
about that.
The passion. I love it.
Well, thanks. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Here we go. Dan, today we have a 12.
A 12? All right. A 12 from Sidon on the Discord. We have a lightning or thunder focused monk subclass.
Mm.
So we're on subclasses. Monk subclass specifically. We got lightning and thunder focused.
A lot of monk stuff.
Yeah.
Lightning and thunder. Okay. If I may go on a brief aside here.
Yes, please.
Dan and I met because I replied to a TikTok of his talking about the worst subclasses in the game. He said that it was the thief rogue, right? Or the scout rogue?
I said the scout rogue.
And I replied that there were three that I could think of, and one of them was a monk subclass.
Yep.
It's the Way of the Four Elements that I believe has been completely overhauled for the 2024 Player's Handbook that's coming out in a couple months. Can't wait to see that. But the way that it is in the 2014 version is just abysmal. And I'm hoping that a lightning or thunder focused monk subclass could be the redemption that an elemental monk justly deserves. Because an elemental based monk is so cool. It's just a bender, right? It's and that's, I think, what they were going for, just stacking a bunch of spells arbitrarily in that subclass, and it just sunk so poorly. I'm excited to explore elements with Monk in our way.
Yeah, very same. It's going to be really fun. I'm really excited to see what we come up with. I'm already, you know, spinning up with my brain with ideas for this because I do think I really like all of the existing sort of like storm subclasses. And I think Monk is ripe for that for sure.
Yeah.
For what it's worth, I think I've sort of come around to a different way of thinking about the worst subclass in the game. At this point, it's definitely the Purple Dragon Knight,
okay.
Or the, what's the other name for it?
The Banneret.
The Banneret, yes.
Awful.
That, I think, is actually the worst subclass in the game. I've come around, the Scout is low, but it's not quite as low.
Yeah, that Banneret is bad. It's real bad.
Well, let's hope that we can make something just a little bit better than that. Michael, it's an absolute pleasure, as always, recording
as
with
always.
You.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to say to the people before we say goodbye?
I do. I have something slightly different today. I was combing through some literature the other day, as one does, just looking for inspiration for my games, and I came across this poem. This is a poem called Ars Poetica by C.W. Bryan, and that is a translation for The Art of Poetry or The Examination of Poetry. I swallowed an apricot seed when I was younger. Everyone told me that it was hard work to grow fruit trees, especially when winter marches south and tries to pry all those tiny golden dots from stubborn wooden hands. I kept it safe, though, tucked away in the pit of my stomach, where despair and embarrassment lived. I fed it reassurances. I swallowed strawberry sunsets and ate the pithy vernal blossoms of childhood. I even drank the recommended 36 ounces of filtered water every day. Years later now, its branches weave their way into my brain, alongside curious blue blood. Apricot juice seeps into my bloodstream and fills my body with sweet yellow-orange nectar. Fruit falls out of my mouth, staining snow-white pages in splotches of optimism each time I sit down to write.
That's lovely.
I like that poem very much. It's just I'll leave the interpretation up to you, up to the listener. Maybe I'll talk about it later. But it just struck me and really got me thinking about the source of ideas or the source of creativity or the things that you have to, you know, think through or go through as a child, as an adolescent, into adulthood, and how that colors what your brand of creativity looks like. I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, that's lovely. I think that's great. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what you create this coming week.
Me too.
And until then, we'll look forward to having you listeners with us next week.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hey everyone, it's Michael. Thanks for listening to this episode of the College of Creation. If you want to see our creations from this episode and our past episodes, you can find those for free on our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/collegeofcreationpod. And if you decide to become a patron, you'll also automatically get access to any revised versions of the things we've created, plus our patron Discord, and bonus chats with Dan and myself. You can send any of your own homebrew prompts or questions to collegeofcreationpod@gmail.com, and our music is by Fuserwolf. You can check out his tunes on Bandcamp and Spotify. As always, thank you so much for listening.